cock your pistols.
Hey, Chief Justice Michael Staley here with another episode of DVD Verdict Presents. If you didn't recognize the opening music, it was the theme song from the detective series Matt Houston, which aired Sunday nights on ABC beginning in the fall of 1983. The show racked up about 67 hour-long episodes over three seasons, and I recently had the pleasure of reviewing the long-anticipated first season on DVD, which started strong but kind of took a dark turn when the network execs predicted that audiences wanted more intense action adventure and less of what worked, which was the tongue-in-cheek repartee. But like a favorite sweatshirt that's been kind of pushed in the back of the closet, this series is well worth seeking out, especially for those of you who have never seen it. You'll really be quite surprised by how much there is to enjoy. And, well, speaking of enjoyment, I'd like to welcome in the star of Matt Houston, Mr. Lee Horsley.
Mr. Horsley, it's a pleasure.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Yourself?
Yeah, I complain, as long as the rain will hold off for a little bit.
That's true. We're supposed to get it all weekend, aren't we?
I know. And I've got a leak in my roof.
Oh, no.
That I cannot find.
Oh.
And it's driving me nuts.
Oh.
My father was once upon a time tried roofing for a bit, and so I tried to learn some things from him, but I'll be darned if I can figure out where this one's coming from. So, I don't know. Anyway, I hate to open up with a complaint.
No, but, hey, you know, no worries.
Yeah.
No worries at all. You know, it's funny. My staff is about, my writing staff is about 10 years younger than me when I was talking to them about, you know, the series coming to DVD and my fond memories of this. They all had this blank look on their face like they had no idea what I was talking about.
Well, it was a long time ago, Michael. I mean, you know, my kids are grown and just got a set. So, I mean, you know, some of this is new and refreshing my memory. But, you know, when your 28-year-old kids pull it out and, you know, and get a yuck with their friends over the material, you know it's of a certain genre that certainly it's been a while since, you know, that at least it made them laugh.
But you know what? The one thing I remember about the show, and it holds up in watching the stuff on the DVD, is just the amount of fun that you guys seem to have in doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really was, especially in the first season, because I think the show was much lighter in the first season than it did there. You know, it was all about, you know, comedy and, of course, you know, Aaron Spelling's formula, which was pretty women, fast cars, nice clothes, big buffets, that kind of thing. It was that eye candy kind of formula that he did so well with in the late, you know, 70s, early 80s. And obviously everything is over the top. That's what's, you know, so interesting about watching it today, plus the wonderful memories. But it was so much fun and hard work. I mean, you know, we did our shows in 6 and 7 days.
Oh,
back
wow.
Then.
You guys weren't even on an 8-day turnaround schedule?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it was, you know, we'd be on stage for 2 days and on location for the rest, and talking some 17, 18-hour days and a lot of locations, a lot of stunts, a lot of, you know, things. And people kind of forget about that. It really truly is going back and thinking about it, just, you know, how hard it was to do that kind of a thing when the characters are bigger than life and overblown. But I mean, it was a total blast for me. I mean, it was my second series, you know, one that was received well, and so I you know, I was happier than a pig, and you know, you know, I got to get a little bit back to my Texas roots and late 70s. I came from a theater background, and so, you know, it was kind of, I had to do everything in my power as an actor to lose my Texas accent, and then who knew? Then I get this show, Matt Houston, so then I'm calling all my relatives and my grandmother 3 and 4 times a day. Just talk to me. Talk to me. I gotta get it back in a hurry, you know? But it sure made the folks in Mule Shoe proud, so.
You know, as actors, because I come from a theater background as well, we're often told that those really iconic parts, those parts you were meant to play, kind of find you. Is that true with this?
You know, I think so. I mean, it seemed to be a very comfortable fit, and the process being, you know, a young actor in the coming from a theater background, I had literally a short-lived series before that to kind of figure out what film was about, because I didn't study film or television, you know, or that kind of thing. And they were all talking a very different language, and was doing stuff like staying up all night. I memorized the script from front to end because I thought we'd shoot it in sequence.
Right.
You know, on my first series, and then, you know, quickly learned that, you know, I think the camera scared me enough. My first experience at it, that instead of sitting in my trailer, I went and I watched. I watched them light, listened to the terms. I knew what they meant when we had, you know, a half-hour turnaround and, you know, what they were doing. And I had to learn about the camera in a hurry because I got hired out of New York. I was living in New York when I got Nero Wolf, which was, you know, the show right before Matt Houston. And literally, that, you know, it was a whirlwind and a blessing. So I think the character was meant for me. I mean, I certainly didn't have great looking women, fast cars, and lots of money in my background, but that was kind of the formula of the day. You know, obviously, you take a kid from USU, Texas, and give him an opportunity to play that. It was a blast. It was wonderful.
How many times did you have to audition for the part?
Twice. I auditioned for the spelling organization, and they were, you know, heavily in my corner. It was great. I don't know if they had other prospects in their camp or not, but in those days, then once they had their ducks in a row, then they had, you know, they'd go and sell it to the network. They had to sell you to the network, or, you know, me.
Sure.
And I know that that was a pretty gut-wrenching day, you know, because they say, oh, this is going to be great, you know, it's going to be wonderful, you're our guy, and however, you know, we're going to go and stand you up in front of, you know, 16 network folks and that you're not going to know, and we'll have somebody else there that will read the lines for, you know, with you and do the scene, and we want you to do this and be, you know, really tough and be really mean, and which, you know, the script really didn't read that way, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was kind of funny. I, you know, so I did what I was told and went in, and God bless, I got it. Next day they said, well, he's the man. So obviously I'm sure there was other stuff going on, but, you know, it all really happened in within a 3-day period that seemed like a month, as an actor looking for work always goes through. You know?
Right. It's interesting because thinking back to that time period, and there was a handful of, because I was 13, 14 years old at the time.
You know, oh, my God, now you're making me feel
sorry,
bad.
Sorry.
Michael, is that fair? Okay, go ahead.
But I'm thinking
I'm
of, like, the idols that my brother and I had at that time, and it was Gil Gerard, Buck Rogers,
right.
And
sure.
Lee Majors, and yourself. There was a common thread that I realized today went through all three of them, and it's that Pamela Hensley played off of all three.
Boy, what a wonderful gal she is.
Yeah.
You know, and so sweet, so nice, and to jump in and do, you know, like 9 pages of exposition and be secretary and kind of, we had fan letters back then saying, when are you going to get together with CJ? And, and you know, the whole 9 yards, people wanted it, and, you know, everybody was going, no, you can't do that, because then, you know, where do you go from there? And,
right.
You know, story-wise, but I was just so appreciative of her, because it's a hard gig to do, and she came in, and she was always prepared, always knew her stuff, and got the humor. When you start something like that and you're supposed to have this lifelong relationship and, you know, you just kind of meet each other, you know, for the first time.
Sure.
It was very interesting to be able to do that, but she pulled it off very well.
Yeah. And you guys have a chemistry that carries through on the audience.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. She was a sweetheart all the way through. And that kind of a show and that kind of a flavor of the time period and everything where, you know, you've got guest casts that are just extremely incredible. I mean, every week you've got, you know, somebody coming in, and to be able to work together and get through that and make sense of shows like, I don't know, the Centerfold Murders and the Yacht Club Murders.
Right.
And, you know, let's just say, you know, sometimes material is tough to overcome with that. But being the pro that she was, you know, she Absolutely. We helped each other, I think.
You're talking about the guest stars and stuff, was that the power of Aaron Spelling at that time? Because it seemed to be like that revolving door of really impressive folks from both from the television world and some film, too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's really the age that highlighted stunt casting and everything.
Yeah.
And you get as many people as you can, you know, as the network will pay for at that point in time. I mean, it was like every... It seemed like every episode we'd have three or four wonderful people. I mean, what sticks out in my mind is like, you know, getting a chance to work with Sid Caesar. I mean, he was the first generation Robin Williams, and I could not keep a straight face and he'd go off, you know, and, you know, try. And I learned so much, and people like Janet Leigh I worked with, and I'll never forget it. I mean, it was my icon, and it wasn't until the second season that I worked with Buddy Ebsen, but, you know, what a treasure of a man. I mean, and just professional. I mean, it was so refreshing to see the real pros and get a chance to work with them, that you might not be able to do that in a feature film environment, to be able to work with that many people so quickly. That part of it was really wonderful. And then, of course, you know, you get to hear the stories of the old days and, you know, what the business was like then. And reminiscing, if you can call reminiscing, I know, now that you've told me that you were 11 years old when you watched this show, okay, you know. All right, but it really was wonderful.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. And you guys didn't have the best time slot in the world. You were on Sunday nights, right?
Yeah, I think they moved us a couple of times. Okay. Maybe you know better about that, you know, as far as my recollection goes, because I haven't really boned up on the history of it a little bit. But yeah, I do, now that you mention it, we did struggle. It was a hard night, but, you know, having done quite a few series, I know, you know, how that, boy, that either works for you or against you. And I know that we struggled, but back in it, you know, in that day and age, you know, they were really concerned, because we were getting like a 37 share, you know, where, you know, there are shows on now that get 5, 6, 7, you know, or something.
I know. Well, and the executives today are so, have such a quick trigger finger that they'll, you know,
right,
they'll invest all this money in a show and they'll cancel it after 3 or 4 episodes.
Right. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's pretty amazing, but I do recall that, you know, that I don't think that our initial time slot was an easy one to crack. I can't remember who we were, you know, up against, but, you know, there were a lot of shows of that flavor, but Aaron was a very powerful force back in those days. And very formulaic in his approach with, like I say, the eye candy and everything. And that's what he was all about. People wanted to see that. I remember going to dailies, and, you know, which obviously scared me to death. You know? I mean, to this day, it's hard for me, you know, to watch myself coming from a different kind of background. And, you know, listening to the conversations and, you know, okay, you know, buffet, you know, more shiny cars, you know, okay, more women, okay, you know, that kind of thing. So, it, you know, that's just kind of what was going on at that particular point in time.
The show only, it lasted, what, 3 seasons?
3 seasons,
okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't make that vaunted 100-episode mark.
No, we didn't, but interestingly enough, it was so popular that it syndicated as like a 5-year series immediately.
Oh.
And so normally, in that day and age, you had to have 5 years before they'd syndicate it. And they syndicated us at 3 years, and that's when it went ballistic. That's when it was like airing twice a day, you know, in different markets and stuff. And, but I just know that it was very rare that if you only had 3 years in the can for them to syndicate it. And when we got that news, everybody was going, yay. And I'm going, what's syndication? And then, you know, so I, you know, kind of just learned by the numbers, I guess.
Was the writing on the wall creatively as you got into the second and third season that things were kind of stagnating, or were you guys feeling that you were...
No, they just changed. You know, they changed, and I don't think it was... You know, I would never point a finger at anybody. I just think that television was changing. But the first season was so light and comedic, and, you know, and And yes, over the top, and you know, all of the above, and everything. But you know, the humor was there. There was kind of a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek cleverness that was about it. You know, Matt Houston didn't carry a gun. You know, he was not a mean man detective. He just would get himself into these scrapes, and like I say, episodes with, you know, humor, James Coco and Sid Caesar, mm-hmm. and you know, people like that. It cracks me up. I mean, certainly antiquated, but. You know, it was fun, and it was humorous, and I think the second season, it started changing at the end of the first. Okay. It started, you know, through network directives, that people wanted it tougher. You know, they wanted him to carry a gun. They wanted to get him a little meaner. They wanted him to be pissed off and get even. And so, you know, we lost some of the ranch settings and the wonderful scenes with Penny Stanton, as John Aprea's mother that ran the Italian restaurant, and, you know, all those cherished little scenes. And, of course, you know, George Weiner is still to this day, you know, one of the funniest men I've ever been around. His character, I mean, there was just more humor, I think, in the first season. And then as it went on, it got tougher, you know, subjects got tougher and everything, and I think it lost a little bit of its lightness and probably what kind of attracted people to it in the beginning.
Yeah, because it's the uniqueness of, it was a fairly large, you had a fairly large supporting cast to start off the, you know, especially mm-hmm. with the two guys who are playing your ranch hands.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, you lose that, and then you
Dennis
become...
Dennis and Paul, bless their hearts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But then you become... you know, Tom Selleck or any other type of interchange. Not that Tom didn't do a great job with Magnum PI, but when they all start to look the same, you know, I've always viewed Matt Houston as kind of the next generation of like the Rockford Files, because you have that charisma that James Garner had. And
well, and that's a very wonderful compliment. I mean, I thank you, you know, for that, because that is exactly, you know, the persona that made a lot of the, you know, the first season work. And then, you know, once again, when, you know, everybody started kind of competing in the toughness, that everything, it just didn't really make a lot of sense. But, you know, the show had been compared to, and the character to, James Garner. And although I'm Texan, he's an Oklahoma boy, I'm a big fan of his. And so that's always a compliment whenever I hear something like that.
Well, and there's only a handful of guys I know who have that type of persona that makes any type of dialogue that you throw in front of an actor like yourself makes it come across as so easy and so natural, and opens that window to the audience to really endear that character to those folks watching.
Well, and I think, you know, the point was is that when you have the opportunity to do a character, that when you're not forced to do seriously and you can have fun with it, it kind of naturally opens up a smile, you know, to people, and it does. It comes off easygoing and, you know, a little bit humorous, and you know, you can be serious when you have to and everything else, but I think it's kind of a friendly approach, I guess, and I think that's why, you know, shows like that worked well, and why shows like that today work well. I mean, if you can get that kind of writing and those kinds of characters. I remember Michael Fisher was producer on it, and he really did. I mean, I know he fought all the time to try and keep that lightness in there, and I did have an opportunity to work with him later down the line, and, you know, and it was great. And then, of course, my whole crew that I worked with on Houston, I got a chance to do Paradise with.
Well, that's right.
You know, later. Yeah. And same DP, and we had the whole family back together. It was like a reunion. It was wonderful. It was certainly a different setting and situation, but it's such a pleasure to be able to go back to work with people that you know and your family. It makes everything a lot easier.
Do you find the business much different today than it was back then?
Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned, you know, earlier just about the hours and how hard it was to do an hour show. And I think, you know, today it's a lot different. You've got more time. I think, you know, things are a little more relaxed. I think they're more experimental now. They don't have to go with a formula and stick to it. They can change it a little bit. Certainly demographics have changed so much in the way that you look at things, but also the business. I mean, stuff that I don't even know about. I mean, yeah. I, obviously my friends in the business that have remained in that tight-knit family of mine, you know, I'd talk to them, and they speak daily about it, you know, and I'm talking about, you know, wranglers and, you know, craft service guys, makeup men, who's, you know, still one of my best friends we fish with every other weekend, and business has changed to the point where it's kind of hard because everybody's frightened for their jobs these days, you know. Everybody is so expendable, and part of it is the economy and everything else, their contracts, their, you know, there are grips and electricians that, you know, have suffered when everything was going out of California and financially and going to Canada and Yugoslavia, if it's, you know, feature films and that kind of thing. And, you know, we've kind of all lived through it, you know, and gone through it together. But, you know, it's definitely the atmosphere on sets have changed. I mean, the ones that I've been on, I don't know, I think there's a kind of a tension in the air. And I think it comes from my friend so aptly putting it, is that, you know, people, they don't pick up shows like they used to. They don't order a half a season anymore. They order one or two or three. And, you know, it scares people. I mean, you know, it's their livelihood, and they've been doing it for a long time. And, you know, that makes it, you know, a little difficult. But, you know, other than that, I think it's, you know, it's still entertainment, and you know, what they capture is what they capture. It works or it doesn't really matter, I guess, in my mind, how they market it, because they've got to find the outlet for it. It's just the process of making it that, you know, kind of concerns me, and, you know, whether the product is good. You know, some place that you don't want to save money on is in your writing staff and the people that are in the trenches every day. That's not a place to cut corners, because it sets a tone on a set. And when you're working those long hours, you know, you better, you know, like who you're around and be able to get into a groove. That's why, and as I call it, the olden days, you know, when you could actually bring your director of photography with you and, you know, and that kind of thing, it saves so much time and energy, because you already know each other and you know how everybody works and, you know, their likes and dislikes. It just seems to be a much more efficient way of doing things. So.
Are you still actively seeking work in the business, or are you kind of...
You know, I am kind of when it comes around, but I'm really not out there beating the bushes. You know, I picked a lousy time to try and become a writer and with the economy, but I'm just enjoying it so much that it's working out. It's very satisfying to me, and, you know, now that all the publishing houses are closing down and, you know, they're stockpiled with, you know, product for the last 4 years. But I'm actually enjoying it, and I think it kind of reflects, I guess, a lot of my background and having been able to work with wonderful people, kind of pick their brains a little bit. It's kind of got me going on that, and also looking at pretty much three-quarter of a lifetime worth of material and knowing what you like and what you don't like.
True.
But it's, you know, it's nice to do it, but it's more books and that kind of thing. I haven't really done much, you know, screenwriting at all. I'm just dabbling in that, basically, in characterizations and that kind of thing that seemed to fascinate me.
It's one of those things I'm curious to see with the DVD being released, if there'll be a resurgence, if your agent will start, you know, your manager will suddenly start getting calls about wanting you to guest star.
Well,
that,
you know, that certainly would be nice.
Yeah.
You know? That's always good. But, you know, I do love to go back. There's, you know, certainly a lot of people that I love to work with. I actually, there was a movie that they called me about, and they said, you're going to get to work with Sean Penn. And I've, of course, always, you know, respected him and admired him. I said, oh, shit, I'll take it. Holy smoke, I don't care. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know? I said, well, you know, it's only 2 days worth of work, and you know, it's his final scene in the picture, and I'm going, great. And now I'm thinking like a typical actor, oh, it's his final scene. So, you know, no matter how bad you are, they can't cut you out. Right? You know? So, you know, that's going through my head. So I go and I have these, you know, two wonderful scenes, and it was called Crossing Over, and I'm going, great, you know, I got to work with Sean. I called all my friends, yay, you know, I worked with Sean, guess who I worked with today, you know, da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
And then I get a call, I don't know, 6 months later, from a reporter from the Los Angeles Times going, "Do you know why they replaced Sean Penn?"
I've got no
idea what's going on. And I'm going, "Replaced? What do you mean? You don't replace Sean Penn."
Right.
So anyway, I don't know actually what happened. But the movie came out. Sean Penn's not in it, and neither am I.
Oh, no.
So, you know, go figure. You know, that's, you know. So, you know, I had to call everybody back and said, "Sorry, the deal's off." But that's
business. That's Hollywood.
You know, that's a treasure of, you know, the fact is, and I've had such a wonderful opportunity over the years to work with so many of my heroes. Jimmy Stewart, Ernest Borgnine was just absolutely wonderful, and he gave me some of the best of it. I was, I think, actually on Matt Houston. That, you know, here's a guy that Academy Award nominations and Marty and, you know, serious actor and everything. And, you know, and he said, then along comes McHale's Navy. You know. And then he said, "You just live great, but they're, you know," he said, "be careful, Lee. You know, they're always going to look at you as Matt, you know." And that point in time, I'm young and bulletproof, and so, you know, I didn't really think about it. And fortunately, that wasn't what happened. I was able to go on and do, you know, some other things. But just to be able to work with, you know, quality people, and, you know, I really have got the best, you know, of everything, because I went to school on those people, and, you know, kept my mouth shut and watched them and learned and garnered as much, you know, information as I could, and loved every minute of it.
You can't ask for anything more than that.
Absolutely.